Welcome to Romecast 3. I'm here with my Tuesday co-host, Andromeda. Andromeda, welcome back to Romecast.
Thank you, Father Nick.
What kind of story you got for us today?
Well, I picked out the story that was kind of found in my Twitter feed. And it's from Mike Pence, our vice president. He gave a commencement speech at Liberty University. And I'll just quote right off of the speech for you, the part that I picked out.
Great.
But my message to all of you in the class of 2019 derives of the moment that we are living in today. You know, throughout most of American history, it's been pretty easy to call yourself Christian. It didn't occur to people that you might be shunned or ridiculed for defending the teachings of the Bible, but things are different now. And he goes on to just say how they're different and what these students should do about it. I picked out a second story, too, that I thought related. It was the shooting actually in your home state in Colorado, Highlands Ranch, the STEM school. And in that shooting, a young Catholic male boy, Kendrick Castillo, lost his life in there, defending his fellow classmates, trying to stop the shooters. So I just thought that those two stories were an interesting juxtaposition in terms of what Christians might be facing as they, especially young Christians, going out into the world from school, either high school or college.
That's right. And before we actually started recording, didn't you tell me at some point that there was some anti-Christian agenda among the shooters?
Yeah. Devin, specifically Erickson, the male, he had apparently posted to his Facebook page for the last few years a lot of anti-Christian slurs and threats even. So it was very clearly motivated against, fellow Christians or fellow students who were Christian in the school. At least that's how the story is reading, even in the secular press.
And we saw that at Columbine here 20 years ago, here in Colorado. It was right around the 20th anniversary of Columbine. And you mentioned to me before also that this wasn't too much in the news cycle. And I have a personal theory why this didn't make the news cycle too much. One of the reasons I believe is, and this was just in the Denver Post, some anti-gun people tried to have a rally, and they didn't exactly tell the kids that's what they were getting reeled into. And then the kids came to this anti-gun rally thinking this was like a memorial service. And then it was kind of getting cajoled. They were getting cajoled into this sort of like David Hogg and the people in Florida. But, David Hogg was just, he was complicit in signing on with these anti-Second Amendment people and became a celebrity for it. Well, these people who were looking to kind of be predators, political predators, I should say, on these students in Colorado, it kind of backfired. And it's not necessarily because they're like all these pro-Second Amendment kids. They just got really mad at them for actually using them for a politicization of what was such a tragedy for them. And what was really amazing about the whole thing is these companies and these political people backed down, and the kids were really, really mad at them and said, "You don't know what we've been through. We just lost one of our friends. We've been shot at. And then you try to turn this into a political thing." And the news covered it, but I really think that that's why they backed down, because usually the news likes to commandeer all of these things to be anti-Second Amendment things, and they couldn't if all the students got mad at them.
That's right. Good for those students for standing up for themselves.
Yeah.
I think the mainstream media, too, has had a little bite after getting sued for making up things.
That's right, with the Sandman, Sandman case.
Yes.
Like,
so I think they've learned a little
million
bit.
Dollars. It's like a $250 million lawsuit that he has, either against the Washington Times or New York Times or something.
Yeah, I think it's CNN. I think he's issued a
CNN.
Couple lawsuits now, all at about the same level, a $250,000 piece, and those are ongoing. So he probably will, it looks like, win, if not all, some of those cases, because the defamation he suffered was severe, and they
That's
were
right.
objective lies. So.
And if, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, at the March for Life this year, they had some Catholics with the MAGA hats, the red hats that say "Make America Great Again," and there were some students from Covington High School in Kentucky who showed up, and then they were first harassed actually by something of Israel, Hebrews of Israel, or Blacks of Israel group.
Yeah, Hebrews of Israel.
Right. And then they were attacked by, or at least verbally confronted, that's a better term, verbally confronted by that Native American. And then, you know, and he was smirking, as Sandman was smirking at this Native American, and people took that to be racist. And then when the full story came out, it turns out that these guys were confronted by these two different groups, and they hadn't actually gone looking for a fight. And the news had smeared them, and even their own diocese had smeared them. And luckily, their lawyer even sent off a preservation of evidence letter to the Bishop of Covington, and he kind of came out with a mealy-mouthed apology not too long after that. But anyway, I think you're right that the media has learned that you can't just manipulate high school students
You can't just push them around. Yeah,
that's right. It's good. But let's talk about that Kenrick. I mean, what a hero! I put up on my Facebook when I found out about that he had died. And by the way, he went to Notre Dame, which was like really a grade school that we used to play when I went to Catholic grade school in Denver. I went to Catholic grade school in the city limits. That's another one that's in the city limits. His dad was a Knight of Columbus, and he apparently said to his dad, "If there's ever a school shooting, I'm going to run in the middle of it, and I'm going to stop it. I'm going to give my life." And someone told me just like 2 days ago, his dad told him, "No, you shouldn't do that," or whatever. But this is exactly what he did. Is someone pulled out a gun, and he ran and blocked his friends from being shot, took the hit himself, and died. And this is exactly what Jesus says: greater love no man has than to lay down his life for his friends. I mean, what an incredible, exact fulfilling. You know, all these people say, well, we don't want to take the Bible literally. That's a kid who took the Bible literally.
Yeah, it's really beautiful, actually. Such a witness just of love, you know, regardless of, he, in this case, happens to be Catholic. So it's no coincidence that he would take such a position. But just a witness to love, just to stand so manly in the face of real danger.
Well, and manly is the key. I mean, there have certainly been women who've done this too, but it's pretty shocking how wimpy the Catholic world of men has become, and what a wake-up call to us all to just say, I'm going to take the hit, and it doesn't matter if it's going to cost me everything. I'm going to do what Christ did on the cross, who gave his life for others.
Yeah, and I didn't know that he had said those things. I hadn't read the story that mentioned that, but isn't it interesting, you know, he was deeds too, not just words. And
that's right.
It really, yeah. And it really is a witness. That's an honest witness.
That's a good segue to my story, how I wasn't a witness. So I get a kick out of this. So I was visiting a buddy down in Pueblo, and I was coming back up to Denver. And I had my cassock down there, but I left his place, and I stopped at this place called Ivy Wild. It's got breakfast burritos and tea, and it's in Colorado Springs. It's kind of this like cool converted grade school into a hipster coffee shop and a bar in the evening. So it's like 10 a.m. and it's just getting warm out here in Colorado. For some reason, we've had a really long winter emotionally and physically here. And so I don't have my cassock on, but I'm in the black pants and the black shirt, and I'm sitting in my car, and I'm trying to decide, do I go in the Roman collar or not? And I decide I'm not going to. So I pop the Roman collar out because I decide, you know what? What the hipsters think when they see this, they think child abusing priests, and that's not what I am. So I'm not going to go in standing for that. So I kind of rationalize why I'm not going to go in for a breakfast burrito and tea, because I don't want to stand for what most priests stand for nowadays. Not most priests, but just the hit that we all have to take. I shouldn't say that. 97% of the priests don't do those things, but we have to take the hit for the 3%. So anyway, so I sit down in this hipster restaurant, and right as I finish my burrito and I'm about to just peacefully enjoy some tea, and remember, there's like hipsters around me, this guy who I thought was homeless a little earlier off the, just my peripheral vision, he comes right up to me, Andromeda, I'm not kidding, he goes, and relatively loudly, he goes, "Are you a Catholic priest?" And I'm just I don't even have the Roman tabin. I'm just in like a black shirt. I'm actually going to use this as like the featured image on the blog. Well, I immediately knew God had taught me a lesson that, you know, I'm going to get found out. Like either I should either come in the cassock, the full regalia, or just a golf shirt, you know? And so I go, and I'm caught, you know, I'm like, yeah. And he goes, will you bless me, Father? And he sits down and I start praying for him. And, you know, I told this story last night to a buddy of mine who's a Byzantine, and he says, I described a little more than we have time for probably in today's podcast, but he said he's like an Eastern holy fool. He's like a holy fool. And the holy fools are these saints who kind of like look homeless and kind of act crazy and are very self-deprecatory, but are very, very, very close to God. And here's one of my proofs he was close to God is he sat down after we prayed together. He pulls out a book by Bob and Penny Lord called Saints, Mystics, and Stigmatists. And he just starts showing me the front cover of these saints, and then he's describing these saints and what they've done for him, and like he just starts going through all of these different saints. Let me see if I can find it up here. Here it is. So it's got like Saint Kateri Tekakwitha talks about her. He starts telling me about Saint Catherine of Genoa and her views of, or her visions of purgatory and how Jesus asked her to read the Gospel of John every day. And then he goes into St. Louis de Montfort, and he pulls out a piece of St. Louis de Montfort's Secret of the Rosary and actually gives it to me and says, these are all the virtues that I have failed at. And it's like, you know, if he had handed it to me and said, these are the virtues you have to work at, I'd be like, oh, this guy just wants to influence a priest. But the fact he said, these are all the virtues I failed at it, and hands me a piece of paper from St. Louis de Montfort, I'm like, oh, no, this is clearly God's message for me, too. These are the virtues that I'm sure I've totally failed at, that this guy is saying this. So he hands me this thing straight out of St. Louis de Montfort's Secret of the Rosary. And I go, you know, can I buy you some food or something? He goes, well, I'd like another roll. So I go back up to the front of this cash register where I had hid the fact I was a priest 10 minutes earlier. And I'm like, I'd like to get my friend their roll, you know, making it sound like I'm just a nice guy buying somebody, a homeless man, a roll. And he comes up and he goes, this is my new friend, Father Dave. So I'm caught up. I'm caught in front of everybody at this point. So it was like such an amazing lesson. Like I either need to go out in clerics or the golf shirt. You're not going to go middle. And the fact that, like, how did he know? Sometimes really holy people actually can recognize priests.
Yeah.
Whether they're holy priests or bad priests. I'm not saying like there was a glow off my forehead like St. Philip Neri or something, but it's amazing because sometimes really holy people can tell a great priest, a mediocre priest, or a bad priest, but they can just tell they're a priest by looking at them. And so there was something almost mystical about the fact that even if I try to get away from it, it's always going to be front and center that I'm a priest.
That's right. I'm reminded of a saint, except I'm not reminded of her name, but she could recognize consecrated hands. That's what she could see. Exactly like that. You know, she saw, a bishop, actually, the story goes, and he was dressed undercover for some reason. And as soon as she saw him, she asked him for a blessing. She saw.
Wow.
But I love that story for a couple of reasons. One, of course, I always hold that priests should be, you know, a visible witness out in the world. Mm-hmm. But I know how it is to put on a habit and, you know, feel that pressure. It's tough.
Yeah.
And also, you know, being a lay person, what that does when I see a priest out in public. I went to UC Berkeley, and they do a really good Latin program there, and so a lot of priests come and take that introductory Latin during the summer, and so you'd see somebody in clerics or a habit, like a Dominican habit, on campus. And, people would flock to him, you know, oh, what is that? Or you were Catholic or knew what, you know, the habit meant. And just the joy that immediately sprung up in me when I would see somebody like that. So, great.
Wasn't it the campus where there was a Dominican in white, and they thought he was in the Ku Klux Klan, and they called like a trigger
That's
alert
right.
or something?
That's right. So that was Father Augustine. He's in the Southern Province. He was on campus, and they saw his rosary as a whip. They said, somebody, a Ku Klux Klan member is on campus, and he has a whip.
And the Dominicans, just for the listeners who don't know this, the Dominicans wear white with a, what do you call the hood on a habit? A cowl.
Yeah, cowls.
Mm-hmm. Cowl, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway, so he's in a white habit with a cowl and a rosary. So what did they say, that the rosary is a whip?
The report went like this. You know, there's a Ku Klux Klan member on campus, and he's holding a whip. And so the police, of course, out right away and found that it was this very, very humble priest named Father Augustine.
Yeah.
And he was very jovial about it. That happens to the Dominicans often, actually.
Wow. Well, and I think one reason that people aren't going to recognize it. I mean, there used to be a time when even secular Jews would recognize a Franciscan or a Jesuit or a Dominican. So it's not like you have to be a Catholic to recognize it. But I think the reason even secular society no longer recognizes us is precisely because so few priests wear it. You know, so actually I went to a Caravaggio exhibit last night. I went with three of my former students from CSU and a buddy who was given a talk for Focus. And we went out downtown Denver before this talk at the cathedral, and I was finally, you know, I learned my lesson. I was in my cassock, and then me and the student were walking down the street, and there was a drunk girl on the street who was like, she wasn't like a homeless person. She was like a rich drunk girl who'd just been drinking to her. It was only like 6 p.m. And she goes, "What happened to you?" And I was like, "I'm a priest." And she goes, "I'm Christian. Punch it up." So she just like gave me a fist punch or something, and that was it. But her opening question was, "What happened to you?" And she wasn't offended. It was just, she'd never seen a priest walking down the street in a cassock, you know. And again,
I think
people are, you know, 60 years ago in New York City, no Jew or Protestant would look at a priest in a cassock and say, "What are you?" Or in her words, "What happened to you?"
Or "What happened to you?" Yeah.
It kind of gives
you this imagery of that particular line of philosophy or theology about, you know, an invisible church. And that's basically, you know, what has happened, you know, with the disappearance of women religious and clerics, you know, monks. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
you know, it's interesting.
Shrunk.
I guess I honestly hadn't put this together to right now. This wasn't in my like plan of things to talk about in Romecast. But the fact that that first guy yesterday actually recognized me as a priest, even in a black shirt. And by the way, my shirt was a short sleeve black shirt, so it wasn't even like I really look like a priest. The fact he recognized me, and then I sort of saw that as prophetic. But there's even something prophetic in her question: "What happened to you?" That the answer is, "I was ordained."
Tomorrow's
actually my 9-year anniversary of my priestly ordination. So there's a kind of a connection between the two people that I saw, that he saw, he didn't see something I do, because I wasn't offering mass. I wasn't dressed like a priest. I wasn't hearing confessions. He saw who I was. And that's exactly what she asked. "What happened to you?" "I was ordained," you know? So, and I guess the external has to be commensurate to that, which is our habit or our clerics. And what a great lesson. But I think we'll close then with just the, this is again from The Life of the Virgin by St. Maximus the Confessor, translated by Shoemaker. We left off last week on Mary the Illuminator. And the very next sentence is, "Then the honorable parents of the Blessed and Holy Child had great joy, and Joachim prepared a great feast. And he invited all his relatives, the learned and the unlearned, and they all glorify God, who had brought them a wonderful miracle, so that the reproach of Anna turned into the greatest glory. She is the gate of God and the beginning of her life and glorious deeds. From this point on, it is fitting that we should elevate our discourse concerning her exalted mysteries and the glories by her grace, intercession, and assistance, for she is the cause and provider of every good thing. She was intelligent with words and had a pleasant voice, as it is written, 'She opened her mouth with wisdom and imposed order on her speech,' Proverbs 31. For these words of Solomon were also spoken about her, and also the following, 'She is clothed in her strength and beauty,' Proverbs 31:26. By the grace and power that was born from her, and she is dressed in beauty. She is dressed in strength and has been clothed by the one who became incarnate from her. She is dressed in beauty and clothed with power, and the following words were also appropriately spoken about her. She was happy in the last days, Proverbs 31:26. For as the queen of all, she holds authority over all things, and from one end of the earth to the other end, all things submit to her and glorify her, for she reigns with her son and king and will reign especially in the last days when the end and conclusion of this fleeting world will take place, and she will reign with her good and sweet son in an unending and incomprehensible reign. She was blessed by all and was full of all grace, and I will say even further that she was supremely worthy of every grace, intelligent with respect to images and words, a scrutinizer of divine visions, completely removed from restlessness, wrath, and gossip, beautiful in soul and body, and ordinary in measure of stature, full of every goodness and every good deed. Nevertheless, she was in this way holy by nature and truly a virgin to the point that not even the slightest desire of any passion that would be corrupting of spiritual holiness ever came upon her. But more than anyone else, her holy soul was full of benevolence and compassion, and in this way she was more than anyone else an imitator of her good and benevolent Son, having a tranquil and humble mind with such an abundance of virtue and excess of grace. Truly she was the queen exalted above every nature and word and deed and thought, for she was to become the mother of the true King of all things, who then became poor and was humbled for our sake unto death by death on a cross, Philippians 2:8. So she, the blessed and glorious ever virgin, was also poor and humble in spirit according to the blessings spoken by the Lord. She was obedient to the priests, a respectful servant and respected by all, for she was a child of divine grace and also the parent of the King of angels and of humanity. So then after childhood, the power of God overshadowed her and adorned her spiritually and bodily with every adornment of virtue, as with golden tassels and many colors, Psalm 44:14. With such comportment and such qualities, then, she was present in the temple of God, truly as a divine offering and spiritual image and eloquent expression, frightful to demons and the desire of angels, but I will say more, wonderful and terrifying to the angels, but virtuous and chosen by the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Thanks for joining us today on Romecast. God bless you.